Welcome to the Deep Dive. We unpack complex topics, give you the core insights, without all the noise.
Exactly.
And today we're tackling something that honestly sounds maybe a little mundane, replacing a road culvert.
Right, just a big pipe into the road.
You'd think, how complicated can that be? But, well, it turns out even something like this needs a super detailed, multi-layered professional services agreement.
Oh, absolutely. It's way more complex than just, you know, swapping out a pipe.
So that's our mission today, right? To peel back the layers on a real contract.
That's the plan. We're looking at the Clear Pond Road Culvert Replacement Project. We'll dig into the planning, the responsibilities, even the financial details behind this kind of essential infrastructure work.
Okay. And our source is the actual agreement.
Yes, the professional services agreement between the city of Shawnee, Oklahoma, and the consulting firm Freeze and Nichols, Inc. We'll call them FNI.
Okay, FNI. And we also have the attachment, scope of services, terms, all that.
Yep, the full package. Scope, terms, conditions, compensation, what the client, the city needs to do. It's all in there.
So why should you, our listener, care about a culvert contract in Oklahoma?
Because it's a perfect little window, really. This isn't just about one culvert. It shows you exactly how these complex public works projects get managed everywhere.
Ah, so you see how they handle risks, how they bring in experts.
Exactly. How expertise solves real engineering problems. It's kind of a shortcut, you know, to understanding all the moving parts when a city build something, a road, a bridge, whatever.
All right, let's get into this specific project then. Clear Pond Road Culvert Replacement. What's actually being built and why?
Okay, so the project is Clear Pond Road Culvert Replacement in Oklahoma County. And the why is simple. The existing structure failed.
Failed how?
It was two 60-inch corrugated metal pipes, CMPs you often hear them called. They basically gave out, collapsed, deteriorated, unusable.
Okay, so the old pipes are gone. What's the fix?
The plan is to design and build a completely new concrete box structure. And it's designed specifically to handle at least the same amount of water flow as the old pipes.
So not just replacing, maybe even improving the capacity slightly?
Potentially, or at least ensuring it meets current needs and lasts. Mm-hmm. Plus, they're rebuilding the two-lane asphalt road over it, basically restoring that whole section.
Now, before they even think about designing the new box, what's the absolute first thing FNI has to do?
That's the initial assessment. It's critical. FNI has to figure out why the old culvert failed.
Like a post-mortem.
Exactly. Was it the pipe material itself? The ground underneath the subgrade conditions? Was it corrosion? They need to understand the root cause.
Why is that so important?
Because you don't want the new one failing for the same reason. Understanding the past failure helps them design the new structure to avoid those specific problems. It's about longevity.
Makes sense. Understand the problem, then engineer the solution. Okay, let's talk money. Every project hinges on this.
Yeah.
What's the total price tag for FNI services here?
The total contract fee for FNI is $94,010.
$94,010. Is that just one number or is it broken down?
Oh, it's broken down. Very detailed, actually, which is standard practice. It's split into two main types, basic services and special services.
Okay, basic services first. Is that like the core design work?
Precisely. It's a lump sum fee, fixed price of $64,450. And that covers the main design phases.
Like what?
Well, conceptual design, that's $31,000. Then the final design, which covers both the 90% complete stage and the final plans, that's $29,650.
Okay.
Then there's a smaller amount for the bid phase support, $2,750. And even preparing the final record drawings after construction, that's budgeted at all $1,050.
So those are the predictable core engineering deliverables. What about the other category, special services?
Right, special services. This part operates on a not-to-exceed basis using time and materials billing up to a cap of $29,560.
And this covers more variable things, support activity.
Exactly. Things like construction phase services, that's capped at $4,800. The survey work needed is $8,160. And the biggest chunk here is geotechnical exploration, figuring out what the ground is like, that's $16,600. These are essential, but maybe less predictable in terms of exact hours needed.
Got it. So the city has this $94,000 contract. How does FNI actually get paid monthly?
Yes, they can submit invoices monthly for the work done. And the city is supposed to pay within 30 days of receiving the invoice and accepting the services.
30 days? What happens if they're late?
Ah, well, there's a clause for that. It's pretty interesting and quite common. If the city doesn't pay within 30 days, the amount due increases by 1% per month.
1% a month. That's quite an incentive to pay on time.
It is. It's effectively an annual rate of over 12%. It protects the consultant's cash flow.
And it doesn't stop there, does it? What if the city just doesn't pay?
FNI has the right to suspend their services if payments are overdue. They just need to give 7 days written notice.
Wow. Okay. So they can actually stop working.
Yes. And there's more. If the city delays or suspends the project for more than 60 days, FNI is entitled to an equitable adjustment in their compensation. Basically, they get paid for the costs incurred because of that delay.
Right. Protects the consultant from being left hanging. So we know the cost structure. What exactly is the city getting for that nearly $95,000? Let's walk through FNI services, starting with that conceptual design, the 30% phase.
Okay. Conceptual design, this is foundational. FNI gathers all the existing info. They do a site visit to check the survey data, see the conditions firsthand.
Makes sense. Boots on the ground.
Right. They also do a QA review on any work done by subconsultants they might use. And crucially, this is where that failure analysis happens. They identify and discuss what went wrong with the old culvert.
So detective work first. What do they actually produce in this phase? What are the deliverables?
They create a design recommendation memo. This outlines their proposed foundation design, any mitigation measures needed.
Mitigation, like ways to prevent future issues.
Exactly. They also provide proposed typical sections for the road, the initial horizontal and vertical layout for the new culvert, some conceptual cross-sections.
Okay, sort of the first visual sketches.
Yes, and the 30% conceptual plans, title sheet, plan and profile sheets, cross-sections. And, importantly, an initial opinion of probable construction cost, their first estimate of what the actual build might cost.
That's quite detailed for conceptual. I see notes here. Culvert sizing uses StreamStats data and HY8 software and ODOT standards.
Correct. They use tools like StreamStats, which pulls USGS flow data, and HY8, a standard hydraulics program, to figure out the right size for the culvert. And everything has to follow Oklahoma Department of Transportation ODOT standards for safety and consistency.
And there are some key assumptions or things not included here, right?
Yes, very important. At this stage, they assume environmental permitting isn't needed. That could change, but it's not in this phase's scope. Also, detailed hydraulic modeling, like complex computer simulations of water flow, that's not part of this initial phase either. It's conceptual sizing based on available data and standard tools.
Got it. So boundaries are clearly set. Now, how do they get from this 30% concept to the final buildable plans? That's the final design phase.
Right. The 90% and final phase. This is where they flesh out all the details.
Yeah.
They develop the detailed 90% design drawings, updated sections, grading plans, all the structural specifics.
And then deliverables.
An updated opinion of probable construction cost, a full project manual that's the spec book, basically.
The detailed instructions for the contractor?
Exactly. Materials, procedures, everything. And then finally, the 100% final plans, delivered as digital PDFs and also in MicroStation DGN format, which is a common CAD standard for engineers.
Okay, plans are done, approved. Now the city needs to hire a contractor. What's FNI's role in the bid phase?
They support the city here. They provide the plan sets for bidders, help answer any RFIs, requests for information that potential contractors might have.
Questions about the design, yeah.
Right. And they coordinate and attend the pre-bid meeting, where all the bidders can come and ask questions together.
And after construction, there's one last step for FNI under basic services, the record drawings.
Yes, the as-builts. After construction is finished, FNI prepares these drawings based on information from the inspector or the contractor. They show how the project was actually constructed, including any changes made in the field.
Why are those so important?
Hugely important for the future. For maintenance, any future repairs or modifications, you need an accurate record of what's actually there.
Definitely. Okay, let's circle back to those special services. You mentioned construction phase services. What does FNI actually do during construction, given it's a limited role?
It is limited, but vital. They attend the pre-construction conference to help clarify the design intent.
Make sure everyone's on the same page.
Exactly. They're available to interpret the drawings and specs if questions come up during construction. And they conduct up to 2 site visits just to observe the progress and report back to the city's project manager.
But, and this seems critical, the contract draws a very clear line about what FNI is not responsible for during construction, right?
Absolutely crucial. The agreement states very clearly, FNI does not guarantee the contractor's performance.
Okay.
They are not responsible for supervising the contractor's workers or operations. And they're not responsible for the actual construction methods, techniques, sequences, safety precautions, None of that.
So F&I designs it, provides some guidance, but the contractor owns the build process and the safety.
Precisely. It clearly defines liability and responsibility. Yeah. F&I is the designer, not the builder or the site supervisor. That separation is key in these contracts.
Makes sense. So who is doing the day-to-day oversight then? Usually the city?
Typically, yes. The contract often assumes the client, the city in the case, will provide the construction inspection services.
Okay. What about the other special services? Surveying, what does that involve specifically?
The survey scope is defined. Topographic survey extending 300 feet east and west along Clear Pond Road from the culvert and 100 feet upstream and downstream along the creek.
Getting the lay of the land.
Right. And they'll use an OKI ticket, that's the local call, before you dig system to locate underground utilities. Mm. Very important safety step.
Don't want to hit a gas line.
Definitely not. They also establish project benchmarks tied to the Oklahoma State Plane Coordinate System and NAVD 88 for vertical elevation. Basically, ensuring everything is located and built at the precise, correct coordinates and height.
High precision. And the last big special service, geotechnical exploration. Digging into the ground.
Yes. F&I hires a specialized geotechnical engineer for this. They'll drill two borings through the existing road pavement near the culvert.
Okay.
Collect soil samples, do some testing right there in the borehole, measure the pavement thickness, all to understand the soil and rock conditions.
And what's the output of that?
They produce a geotechnical data report, or GDR. But here's a key detail.
Okay.
The GDR itself doesn't include interpretations or recommendations.
Just the raw data. Yeah. Why?
It keeps the factual data separate from the engineering judgment. The interpretations like analyzing the failure, understanding the geology, and recommending design parameters like bearing capacity, those come in separate project manuals from the engineer.
Interesting separation. And I see a note. No traffic control needed because the road's already closed.
Convenient, right. Mm-hmm. Since the culvert failed, the road shut down, so they don't need complex traffic management just to drill the borings.
So F&I has a lot to do, clearly. But this isn't a one-way street. The city of Shawnee, the client, has significant responsibilities too.
Absolutely. The agreement spells these out clearly. The city acts as the main information source.
Mean?
They have to give F&I all relevant existing data, reports, city policies, ordinances, maps, everything they have that could affect the project.
Yeah.
F&I isn't starting totally blind.
And they need to be actively involved, not just hand over the contract.
Very actively. The city coordinates meetings. They have to review and comment on F&I submissions promptly.
Keep the approvals moving.
Right. They handle publishing public notices, requesting data from other agencies, providing base mapping like GIS data.
Right.
And they must designate someone with authority to act on their behalf, make decisions.
A point person. What about physical access and permits?
City's job. They arrange access for F&I to get onto any public or private property needed for the work. And the city is responsible for getting all the necessary governmental approvals and permits.
That's huge. Takes a potential bottleneck away from the consultant.
It does. And financially and legally, the city bears its own costs related to these responsibilities. They need to examine all the documents F&I provides, get legal or insurance advice if needed.
Do their due diligence.
Yes, and provide timely written decisions. The contract really emphasizes this clear split. City handles things like utility coordination and construction inspection. F&I provides the defined engineering services.
Which brings us to the what-ifs. What happens if something unexpected comes up or the project needs something beyond the defined scope?
The agreement anticipates this with a section on additional services. It lists many things that are specifically not included in the base or special services fee.
Why list what's not included?
To manage expectations and clearly define the boundaries from the outset. It prevents scope creep and disputes about what was or wasn't part of the original deal.
Can you give some examples of these excluded additional services?
Sure. Things like helping the city secure project financing, providing traffic control for field work beyond maybe that geotech exception, doing that complex hydraulic modeling we mentioned earlier.
Okay.
Also extensive environmental services like preparing impact statements or handling complex permits, assisting with litigation if legal issues arise, or even just making more site visits during construction than the two included.
So if the city suddenly realizes they need, say, a full environmental impact study, F&I doesn't just automatically do it.
No. That would be an additional service. The city would have to formally request it in writing, and they'd negotiate additional compensation with F&I for that extra work.
Got it. So the contract provides a mechanism for changes, but it requires formal agreement and payment.
Exactly. It allows flexibility if the project evolves, but ensures it's done in a structured, transparent way. Clear definitions are key.
Wow. Okay, we've really dissected this. What started as, you know, fix a pipe turns out to be this incredibly precise dance.
It really does. You see the detailed planning, the clear division of labor between the city and the engineer, the financial accountability baked in, how risk is carefully managed, all laid out in this agreement.
And you see how the experts, FNI here, are brought in, how the design goes from concept to final buildable plans. There's so many steps and specific details behind a successful public project.
Yeah.
Way more than you'd ever guess just driving by.
Absolutely. And this level of detail isn't unique to this culvert. It's how most civic projects, big and small, are managed to ensure they're built right and built to last.
So it makes you think. The next time you drive over any bridge or even a small culvert like this one, what other layers might be hidden in the paperwork? Things like long-term maintenance agreements, performance guarantees, plans for dealing with unexpected future challenges, all ensuring that piece of infrastructure keeps working safely for decades.
That's the hidden complexity, ensuring everything functions smoothly long after the construction crews leave.